Before we start today's show, we want to share some exciting news from the Radiotopia family. Normal Gossip is back for its sixth season. If you've ever found yourself eavesdropping on strangers' juicy conversations and maybe wanting to chime in too, this show is for you. On Normal Gossip, host Kelsey McKinney shares the juiciest gossip sent in by listeners all around the world, then brings in a special guest to weigh in on the actions within the story. The stories are everything from petty to bizarre to downright strange. Fun fact, you might recognize a few of this season's guests from the Radiotopia universe. So check it out. New episodes start April 17th. Listen to Normal Gossip wherever you get your podcasts. Radio Diaries is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Radiotopia.
From PRX.
From PRX's Radiotopia, this is Radio Diaries. I'm Joe Richman. We got some surprising news recently. We beat Oprah. Oprah, who no one beats at anything. We also beat comedian Amy Poehler, writer Neil Gaiman, and historian Doris Kearns Goodwin. For what? Audiobook of the Year. The New York Times wrote, "The 2015 Audiobook of the Year is not a book." So yes, it wasn't a book. But our series Mandela in Audio History is one of our favorite projects, and we're very grateful to get this award. So to celebrate, and to mark Nelson Mandela's birthday this month, we are bringing you a chapter from that series. The entire documentary is over an hour. Today's chapter is about 12 minutes. But to start off, I'm going to tell you a story behind one very small part of it. 9 seconds, actually. Over the 27 years Nelson Mandela was in prison, he became more and more of a mythical figure, an icon. Part of the reason was that for all that time, he was hidden from public view. No photographs, no recordings. The public didn't hear Mandela's voice for 27 years. But there were recordings, secret recordings. On Robben Island, where Mandela served most of his time, there was a prison guard named Christo Brand. Many years later, after Mandela was elected president, Brand became the manager of the Robben Island gift shop. That is a true fact. But back in the 1970s, one of his jobs was to secretly record and transcribe prison visits between Mandela and his family. One day, Brand brought home one of these cassettes to transcribe, and he forgot to return it to prison authorities. For 2 decades, he left that tape in a box in his garage. Brand happened to mention that tape when I interviewed him back in 2003 for our documentary. It took 2 months to convince him to let me hear it. One side of the cassette said Christian rock. The other side didn't say anything. I remember putting it in a cassette player and thinking, this is the only known recording of Nelson Mandela's voice in prison. It isn't just history. It's news. And then I hit play.
And then,
it's a recording of a prison visit between Winnie and Nelson Mandela. Unfortunately, this tape is so old and badly recorded, you can't really make out what they're saying. In the end, one of the most historically important archival discoveries of my life is basically background ambience. You'll hear it in about 4 minutes. This is Mandela and Audio History, Chapter 3, The Robben Island Years.
This is the site of South Africa's top security jail, Robben Island, a narrow pencil of land off Cape Town, 7 miles out in the South Atlantic. These watchtowers stand guard over men who millions of black South Africans regard as their government in exile.
We landed at Robben Island. There's big iron gates, and every gate bangs behind me. Bangs behind me. And then the warder opened up one of the doors of the cell, wooden doors, and then he opened the grill and he just shoved me. And there was my bucket and a couple of blankets. And that was my first night.
We worked at the lime quarry. We'd never done pick and shovel work before. So every day we had bleeding hands and blisters. Very, very hot. When we started working there, we were told that we'd work there for 6 months. We in fact worked there for about 13 years.
In the lime quarry, most of the time you're leaning on your shovel or your pickaxe. But all of the time you're in a group of people discussing things.
I mean, every single man on the island was a book, so to speak, and you could really learn from each one of them.
Our universe were 30 people. We were completely isolated.
They put us into a section on the island called the Terrorist Camp. And we were called the Terries. Nelson Mandela, Walter Sisulu, people that they identified as leaders.
It was, to a very large extent, a mistake for the regime to bring us together. In spite of the fact that we're in prison, we were able to stand away from ourselves and to discover the weaknesses and the mistakes that we made in the course of our struggle.
People would say that life in prison is very tedious, but nobody wandered around bored, doing nothing. And if I wanted to see you, I needed to make an appointment with you. Can you believe that in prison I have to make an appointment to see somebody when I'm locked up with you for 24 hours a day? And people were pretty strict about it. I couldn't go up to somebody and say, okay, can we have a chat about this? No, we can't. I'm booked. But I ended up being like that because if you didn't have appointments, your life would have been unstructured and meaningless.
Asikatali noma besbopa sizimisele inkululeko.
My family lived under very difficult conditions without a head of the family who could support them, give them the love and the security which they deserved.
My name is Zinzi Mandela. When my father went to prison, I was 18 months old. So I think I was about 13, 14 when I saw him for the first time.
The following rules are applicable to all visitors to Robben Island. No parcels or articles.
I thought he would hold me, you know. I thought he would lift me in the air, you know, maybe spin me around. But obviously that didn't happen. The reality was that I had to see him behind this glass partition, and we spoke through a telephone. There were warders on either side of us interrupting the conversation and saying, you cannot speak about that. Whose name is that? You cannot talk about that person. For many years, I never saw my father standing because he would walk in there and find him seated already. So I had no idea even how tall he was. For him, it can't have been easy.
Well, I think in the nature of the apartheid system, they had no option but to bury us alive. No newspaper was allowed to publish a photograph of a prisoner. They hoped that way the public would simply forget us.
Cape Town glowed in warm, sunny weather today for one of its most colourful ceremonies, the opening of Parliament. It was opened at noon by the President, Mr. Fouché.
The Republic has enjoyed a year of peace and tranquility.
All political movements were banned. Everything was quiet, ostensibly. In terms of the struggle, we were in the doldrums.
Protest, agitation completely died out. And yet, under the surface, it continued to bubble.
They had locked up Mandela in jail, but they hadn't looked around to say, where are their children and what are they doing?
The student movement and the leadership of people like Steve Biko, there arose a group imbued with the spirit of black consciousness.
Black people need to defeat the one element in politics which was working against them, and this was a psychological feeling of inferiority.
The reaction of the older generation to us was, are you guys mad? Those guys are going to come blow you away. They're going to kill you. And we said, no. First thing is you stand up and speak your mind, as any normal human being has the right to do.
You could feel it. You could feel that something had to give. It happened on June the 16th.
Teach yourself Afrikaans.
Good evening, listeners. Let us start off by getting to know all the Afrikaans sounds. Lach, dag en nach.
Afrikaans is a hybridization, if you like, of Dutch. It's a language that was used by the rulers.
Thank you.
And the black children hated Afrikaans with a passion.
1975, and Afrikaans is exactly 100 years old. To pay homage to the Afrikaans language, pupils of the school present a play in Afrikaans.
Every school day began with an assembly of all the kids. And one day there's an announcement.
I'm going to speak to you about Bantu education, the education of 1 million Bantu children.
As of today, every subject would be taught in Afrikaans. And the teacher walks in, history becomes geskiedenis. And we're all like, what are you talking about? He says, I don't know either. And that didn't work. Whole classes failed. When they did that, they actually mobilized the entire school generation.
At 8:15 in the morning, and precisely according to plan, students simultaneously marched out of 5 schools in Soweto, intending to protest the Afrikaans issue in a mass meeting at the Orlando football stadium.
We had hundreds, probably thousands, of school kids. And we thought we know everything there is to know about managing protests. The first thing we're worried about is that everyone must be accounted for at all times. So we then had chains of 5 kids. And make sure you're holding somebody's hand all the time. If not holding somebody's hand, get worried, because where is your partner?
Then it became really a torrent, a sea of young black faces. And at that point, the police tried to stop the march from going on to Orlando Stadium.
I've never seen that many police. And you didn't only have police at that time, you had the defense force. So you actually had the army. I mean, there's a group of kids. Kids with shining black shoes and little white socks and teeny little tunics. And they're singing freedom songs, holding one another. We actually looked cute. It's unbelievable to think that anyone could have stood firm on their feet and actually shot into that crowd. We had hundreds of school kids running helter-skelter, running all over the place. We had planned for water pipes. We had planned for maybe rubber bullets. We had not planned or thought that it's possible that people were actually going to be killed on that day.
Within 36 hours of the start of a march by 10,000 pupils in protest against Afrikaans, 29 people were dead and 250 injured.
The mayhem went all over Soweto. The following day it went on all over the country, and really South Africa was on fire.
Here in Durban, 3 police baton charges were needed to break up a 2,000-strong demonstration at Claremont Native Township.
It was like a country at war. And I never forget listening to my radio as the demonstrations were spreading like a prairie fire, and it occurred to me that the regime that we thought was powerful seemed to be terribly disorganized, panicking.
Since June the 16th, when South African troops and police opened fire on a peaceful school children's demonstration, the white government has presided over the largest massacre of its black population since South Africa came into existence.
When you see your friends being shot at for just walking in the street, it does something to you. And therefore you would look around, what are the alternatives? Do I become like my mother, forever be under the yoke of apartheid? And the alternative was for me to not be like my mom,
great as she was, but to go and fight.
Information kept on coming through the prison walls about what was going on. The significance of the 1976 uprising was that the government actually produced one of the most rebellious generation of African youth. They were very militant, they were very brave, and there is nothing as encouraging to a prisoner than to know that the ideas for which you are suffering will never die.
1976 was the turning point. Black people had made up their mind. We're not taking this anymore. And South Africa was never the same again.
That was Chapter 3 of Mandela and Audio History. You can order the full series as an audiobook, the 2015 Audiobook of the Year, at mandelahistory.org. The series was produced by me, Joe Richman, with Sue J. Johnson and Ben Shapiro, and was edited by Deborah George and Chris Turpin. The Radio Diaries podcast is produced by Sarah Kate Kramer, with help from Nellie Gillis. Radio Diaries is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collective of now 13 great shows. To listen to all the shows in our podcast collective, go to radiotopia.fm, and that should keep you busy until we're back with another episode of Radio Diaries. Until then, I'm Joe Richman. Thanks for listening. Radiotopia.